G'day, team. Welcome to another installment of your favourite podcast. Craig Anthony Harper, Tiffany and Cook over there at TYP Central, as she always is. Hi.
Happy Monday, Harps.
Happy Monday night. Yeah, well, here we are at 7 p.m. in the thriving metropolis, 7:03. Have you had a good day?
I've had a good day. I got the old pushy out today.
What?
The old road bike.
The Treadley?
Yeah.
And how far did you ride?
10 kilometres.
Well, you're not allowed.
I did 20.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Not in one direction, Harps. Not in one direction.
You rode 20 Ks in a 5K radius?
Yeah, back and forth.
Did you?
Round and round.
Are you sure? Or do you reckon maybe you went a little beyond the radius?
Can't tell you.
I reckon you just went, oops. And what was it like getting back on the bike?
Oh, I haven't ridden it for so long and it was really good. It was really good.
If you could only ride or run, what would you do?
Well, I'd ride.
Forget injuries and stuff. Forget that. Just
okay.
What you would.
Run.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Only because it's time efficient and I'm very, I'm very productive here at TYP HQ.
Fuck off. You do fuck all. You just got out of the hammock for this one. Before that, you were in the jacuzzi. Before that, you were getting your nails done illegally by some cash lady who comes around. I don't know what that's about. And then some cash dude who comes around and gives you a fucking rub. So there's a whole lot of underground businesses.
What podcast am I on here?
Hey, mate. Hey, you're not on yet. There's a whole lot of cash underground. Do you know what I heard? I don't know. I can't deny or verify this because it's got nothing to do with me. But I did hear Tiffany Ann Cook, and Norm will get to you in a moment. There's quite a few underground businesses in Melbourne that are thriving, if you know what I mean.
Are they really?
I've heard there may be the odd hairdresser getting around or nail lady or cleaning person or who maybe shouldn't be, who's just a little bit of cashy here and there. Because just they have this small thing about feeding their family, apparently. I think there's, I don't know, maybe that's a lie, but I have been told that by a few people that there's a couple of little cottage industries, cash-based cottage industries going on.
Well, in some of their defences, if people aren't registered for GST, I'm not sure how they're supposed to survive if they're not getting any help.
Well, I don't have any names tax office, so don't ring me. Don't ring me.
I might start throwing a bit of polish down on someone's nails for a dollar.
Do you know what? If all the
roll with the polish, yeah.
Of all the girls, you're not on yet. I've told you, you're not here yet. We haven't opened the door. Stop getting ahead of yourself.
Can't help it.
I reckon of all of the girls that might, or the ladies, I should say, that might be kind of in that beauty therapy, nails, makeup, hair space, the girl who chews her fingernails down to the knuckle and has never worn nail polish in her life, I don't reckon she's the one to start that business.
You're probably right.
You just keep teaching women how to punch men in the face and we'll leave the nail stuff to the ladies. Please don't send me an email. G'day, Norm. How are you?
Am I on now?
Yeah, mate. Welcome officially to the U Project.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Craig, and I know the lovely Tiffany. Thankfully, I haven't been punched in the face by her.
No, mate,
I'm
she does.
Too far away.
You know that she's a pugilist, don't you? You know that she has a background in punching people in the face. Does he know that, Tiff, or not?
I don't know. Do you know that, Norm? I can't remember.
I don't think we entered into that part of the conversation where you've
told
me that.
She actually has quite a few legit fights and a state title or two under her belt punching people in the face. So we'll both stay on her good side.
Yeah.
And
you
I'm
might
glad
be nearer to her than I am. I'm a bit further away, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why we keep it an electronic affair and not a face-to-face affair, because probably I'd get punched every fucking podcast because I don't really know my boundaries. I realise them about 3 seconds after I've crossed them, which is somewhat problematic when you talk to the public and you have a big-ish audience. Anyway, mate, thank you so much for joining us on the U Project. Are you in Queensland?
Yeah, Brisbane.
Is Vegas, and this got nothing to do with what we're going to talk about, but
right.
We are a directionless wonder here at the U Project. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no strategy. There's no pre-planning. We think that organisation structure are overrated. So we just freestyle it. So tell us about the first tattoo that you got. What are you, 75 years old? How old are you?
Well, 51 actually. And like, my first bit of ink today.
It's quite significant. It's on, for those who can't see, which is everyone because we're audio, it's on Norm's left forearm on the inside.
It is.
What is it?
It depicts, it's a picture, it's a memorial tattoo.
Hmm.
And just to set some context, and I'll try not to get too emotional when I'm trying to take you through this. So we were due for our seventh grandchild to be born about 8 weeks ago. Jasper, his name was.
Wow.
And he had a number of problems that had to be fixed around his heart when he was born. He would have been going into open heart surgery a few weeks after birth and would have had a few more surgeries between now and when he was 4 years old to fix some valve issues. However, unfortunately, he never actually got to take a breath. He was born sleeping on the 28th of July, full term. And we still don't know what's happened. We're waiting for the autopsy results. So it's been a very traumatic time for the family because we don't actually know what happened to him. The autopsy, my son and daughter-in-law were advised to have an autopsy because of the condition he had. They didn't think that would be the cause of death. So we're waiting until early October to find out what the cause of death was.
Oh, mate, I'm so sorry to hear that.
So, it's been a pretty devastating few months. As a family, we got to spend, and unfortunately, you don't get to understand what amazing organizations are out there until you need them. There was an amazing organization here called Hummingbird House. Cause my daughter-in-law had to give birth to Jasper and go through that as well. But Hummingbird House offer it's like a children's hospice. So they deal with obviously terminally ill children, but they've also got what they call a great after death care team. They got my son and daughter-in-law got to spend a week with Jasper in there creating some memories. So we got to spend that time. It's such a hard thing to articulate when you're holding a beautiful, perfect baby boy and he's not there. You just want him to wake up. He just looks like he's sleeping. But one of the things I wanted to do as a memorial was to get a tattoo. I've never had a tattoo. So because he was born in July, he's a Leo. So I've got a lion. I've got an infant child resting on the moon and some stars. Seven stars to depict seven grandchildren, and his name and the date.
That's beautiful, mate. That's amazing. Who designed it? Who did the artwork?
Well, I've just been to see Kirsten Young today at Native One Tattoo on the Gold Coast. So she was absolutely excellent. I found some imagery which I sent over to her and said, "Look, this is what I'm looking for." And I think now my wife as well had a tattoo done today as well. So we've been both been down the Gold Coast today and my son and daughter-in-law have also had a tattoo. So we've all ended up getting sort of memorial tattoos for him and on my left arm because that's the arm that's closest to your heart. So, I wanted something. As I said, I've never had a tattoo in my life, but I wanted something to, you know, having close by that I could look at every day and think of him. So
wow, that's beautiful, mate, because a day won't go by where you're not thinking about him, but also officially it makes you a badass. So well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you ever thought about getting a tat before now?
Oh, look, my son, he's like, he's got quite a few on him and I've looked at him and I'm thinking, I have thought of it, but I've just never got around to it. Like you say, I'm nearly hit 75 now, so I never thought I was going to get one.
Nah, you don't look a day over 74, though, really. No, you look great. Mate, I'm just fucking with you. No, you're a good man.
There you are.
Now, you're a good man. I did a deep dive on you. Tiff went, Norm's amazing. And you are amazing. So people will know a little bit already because they would have read the bio, they would have read the synopsis, the snapshot, the overview of this show, so they'll know a little bit about you going in. Tell us, before we jump into what you do and the great work you do and your not-for-profit, tell us a bit about you growing up and your childhood, because it kind of gives some context to the passion that you have now for working with people who are homeless and sleeping rough.
Yeah, sure. Sure. So we've gone from that and talking about Jasper, my grandson, and your listeners will probably gather from my accent, I'm not a local boy to Australia, so originally from the UK, a place called Coventry, which is in central England. And growing up, you know, I suppose it starts really, my mum and dad were happily married. My dad had a business, had a shop fitting business, carpenter by trade, and in his early 30s, he suffered a stroke. Which left him heavily disabled. It paralyzed his right-hand side, his face dropped. That impacted his speech. That was pretty much the end of the business overnight. And my mom was a bit younger than my father at the time, and she was bringing up a very small child, which was myself. And now my dad was heavily disabled. That put a lot of stress and strain on the relationship. They separated and got divorced, and my dad found himself homeless and sleeping rough on the streets of London in his early 30s. And I was a very young child at the time. And look, I've got vague recollections of my dad coming in and out of my life. As a child, I don't even know what time would pass. I just remember him being around for like 1 or 2 weeks. And my mum would tidy him up, get his hair cut, shave, some new clothes, and then he'd go back to London. And at the age of 42, he suffered a heart attack, which ended his life, and he died lonely and homeless on the streets of London. And I was 11 years old at the time and helpless and powerless to do anything about that. I never had the opportunity to say, you know, I love you, goodbye. That was it. He was gone. And I think that, you know, that's where the journey of bed down started, but I just didn't realize it at the time. Childhood. Look, after my mom and dad separated, my mom, obviously a single mother, bringing up a child, and in the UK they have what they call these council estates, which are like low social economic sort of areas of cities in Coventry. I was close to my mom and especially close to my grandmother, and life was interesting when my dad died, because it certainly hit my mom pretty hard. And the way she would find comfort was at the bottom of a bottle. So she developed a problem with alcohol. Mm. So from 11 to sort of into my, you know, late teens, that was pretty problematic. And I was especially close to my grandmother. So we were in this interesting dynamic of, you know, my dad had passed away. My mom had took that pretty hard, and alcohol became quite an issue. Mm. So going between 11 and obviously finishing school, and in school at the time you sort of finish school at 16. And, you know, as I got older, her problems seemed to get worse. And she certainly, although I didn't realize at the time, she certainly had mental health issues. That's for sure. Yeah. And, you know, when she had alcohol, she would become a different person, and she would get verbally, she would get quite verbal and a bit physical.
Mm.
And, you know, I often got kicked out of the house, and I would end up at my grandma's. So, yeah, I said earlier, my pedigree isn't very good, because my dad died at the age of 42 when I was 11.
Mm.
And my mom died at the age of 44, just before I turned 21.
Wow.
So, and what did
mum die from, mate, if I can ask?
No. And what contributed to that was certainly alcohol.
Yeah.
But as it turned out, meningitis.
Wow.
Yeah. Meningitis had a role to play there. And I had been... we'd had quite a big argument, and I'd been kicked out of home. So I was staying at my grandma's, and I'll never forget. Tiff doesn't know about this. We haven't gone this deep into your podcast, but I'll never forget it. I was at work one day, and I finished my shift, and I came out, and I was getting ready to go on the bus, come out of this factory where I was working, and my mate was there, and I was like, oh, this is strange. What's he doing? His name's Gary, and he goes, Norm, I don't know if you've heard on the radio, but there's been a woman found dead in Wood End. I think we should go and check on your mom. And we did. And it was like a movie scene when I got there. It was like the police were all in her flat and it was all taped off. And I was like, far out, what's going on here? And I tried to get into the house and they wouldn't let me in. Mm. Or the flat, I should say. I tried to get into the flat and they wouldn't let me in. And it turned out she'd been found in suspicious circumstances, and I had to go to the police station, be questioned and all the rest of it. My grandma was then brought in, and you know, because she didn't know, and someone had gone to collect her and brought her in. And so that was quite a traumatic time. As it turned out, it was natural causes, because they had to do an autopsy on her as well. It was between alcohol and meningitis.
So,
I mean, my mum died in 1990, and then I went off the rails for a few years, because I'd lost my mum and dad in quite a quick succession.
Mm.
But my grandma was the rock in terms of my grandma on my mum's side was the rock that was really, in terms of bringing me up. You know, we were very close. And at the age of 24, I met my now wife, Leslie. And that was a quick romance. I met her on her birthday in October the 30th, 1994. Mm. By April, I think, 1995, we bought a house together and we moved in. Wow. So we did it all backwards. We did everything backwards. And then by December that year, 1995, my son Bailey was born. So it was quite a quick succession. We had a very long, too long engagement, as Leslie would say.
How long's too long, mate?
Well, 2002, we got married. So it was like 7 years.
Yeah, your shit years. House. Yeah, your shit yeah, house. What's that
yeah,
about?
I always said to her, I said, look, we'll get married when I get a job to make sure that you're going to be treated as a princess for the day. I didn't want to just do a, because when Bailey turned up, everyone was like, you need to get married. You need to get, you know, there's all this pressure about getting married and stuff. I was like, no, I don't want to get, you know, registry office, backyard ceremony. I was like, no, I want to do it properly. And then I got a job. I got a job in the automotive industry at Jaguar and Land Rover. And, that's when we sort of set the date.
Mm.
But then my grandma was, she was a smoker in her early life. And then that led to breathing difficulties for her. She had COPD, it's called chronic obstruction pulmonary disorder.
Yeah.
And she was on oxygen and she was in sheltered accommodation and, you know, being looked after and stuff. But she was in and out of hospital for many years as well. And, on the run up to me and Leslie getting married, she got quite sick and was in hospital. And I would go and visit her and she was like, have you got married yet? And I was like, no, it's not for another few weeks. And she would like roll her eyes, go, oh no. And she was trying to hang on. She was trying to hang on until we got married. And she actually she passed away the week we were getting married.
Ugh.
And I buried my nan on the Friday and me and Leslie got married on the Sunday. So sorry, this all starts quite dark, doesn't it? So,
it's all good, mate. It's your story. We want to hear it. It doesn't.
Yeah.
There's no test you've got to pass. I just wanted to ask you a couple of things.
Yeah, go.
So you said when your mum and dad, well, your dad passed away, then your mum passed away, and you went off the rails. What did that look like? What does off the rails mean?
It meant basically I didn't give a shit, and I would go out and. You know, I had a job, but I'd go out at night, get tanked up, and I wouldn't really give a shit about going to work the next day. And I'd have time off, get warnings. And
what was work?
Work at the time was in an automotive supplier that made the electrical wiring harnesses for the cars. And I used to work as a die technician, which was on the end of all the wires that go into the various plugs. The dies are the actual, they punch on the terminals that then all click together. So I used to look after them and maintain them and fix them up if they broke down. And it was a fairly decent job. And look, I just didn't give a shit for 3 or 4 years. I really didn't.
It's not surprising. I mean, it's how old were you when your mum died?
I was 20. I was a couple of months away from my 21st.
Yeah, so you're 20 years old. Boys are immature anyway. Women mature. Girls and women mature, you know, quicker than blokes as a rule. So you're still, I reckon when you're 20, you're kind of half man, half kid. You know, you're in that developmental stage where you're trying to figure shit out. You're trying to be an alpha male. But is it fair to say that, thank God, Leslie rolled up?
Oh, look, I think I was on the other side of it by then. I got a lot out of my system, to be fair. And like you say, we're a bit immature at the time. I sort of matured
right
over a few years. But, you know, I guess I just needed to get it out of my system. And the only way I could do that was I really just didn't give a hoot about much. You know, I was living in a place with my mate. We were sharing a house. The house was like the Amityville Horror. it was a bit of a nightmare house, and we just took somewhere. So, and ironically, it was across the road from a pub, so that was easy to get to and go for a few beers. And a few beers led to a few more beers and a few late nights. And
well, it seems like a sign, doesn't it? When there's a pub across, surely that's a sign. Did you, because mum and dad passed away in their early 40s? Did you have fear/anxiety around dying young?
No, not really. Not until I got older and Bailey arrived. And when I met Leslie, two beautiful stepdaughters, I guess once you start having responsibility, you start to think of your mortality. I did start to think, you know, my pedigree is not too good. But, you know, it wasn't front of mind. It wasn't, it was there, but it wasn't there. You know, because I was enjoying having a family, you know, bringing my son up, married to a beautiful woman, you know, my soulmate. Yeah, so.
Well, I guess also, no disrespect at all to mum or dad, you had a very different, by this stage, you had a different lifestyle and a different operating system, right? Your lifestyle was much, much healthier.
Oh, by the time when I met Leslie.
Yeah, well, and beyond, you know what
I
mean?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was. So much so, I mean, you know what it's like when you meet a woman, you fall in love, you kind of like, with your friends and stuff, you kind of go off the radar. You're not out every, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night anymore. You're spending time with someone else. So I wasn't going out as often as I was. And as a result of that, you know, I guess that becomes more healthy.
All right. Let's talk about your passion. Let's talk about the great stuff you're doing. So where did the idea for Bed Down come? Was the genesis in your dad's story? I guess it was.
Yeah. So just to set some context there. So my wife's a mental health nurse. And we came out to Australia in 2008 on the back of Queensland Health sponsoring us on what was called the 457 visa at that time. And we came over. My job, I was working at Jaguar and Land Rover at the time. I left my job and I never had a job to come to in Australia. And we'd never been to Australia. So we stepped off a plane at a place called Rockhampton in November 2008. And we'd left the UK -5 and snowing and stepped off onto the tarmac in Rockhampton. It was like, all right, it's like 40 degrees here. It was like baptism of fire, literally. And we spent a few years in Rockhampton, living at a place called Yeppoon. And Yeppoon was like paradise on earth for us because coming from Coventry, central UK, is nearly grey every day. You know, raining, go to work when it's dark, come home when it's dark. So being by 2 minutes from the beach. It was absolute paradise. I'd scored a job with Queensland Government as well as a manufacturing specialist, so linking my skills out of the automotive industry into there. And we spent a few years in Rockhampton, and we were then, my wife got a position down in Brisbane in correctional mental health. And I tried to get a transfer with Queensland Government, and they said, sorry, Norm, we haven't got a position for you to go to. So from there, one of the not-for-profits that we used to partner with to deliver the Queensland Government programs contacted me and said, hey, Norm, we hear you're coming to Brisbane. Do you want to come and work for us? I was like, yeah. That all lined up nicely, straight into a job in Brisbane. And I nearly made it to 8 years in that not-for-profit, but it was a not-for-profit funded through government, and government funding went like this over the years, and people had to leave. And I was made redundant just over 3 years ago at the end of August 2018.
Mm.
And after applying for a lot of jobs through Seek and all the other different platforms, I started getting a lot of Dear Norms coming back. And I got to this point in time and I was like, far out, you know, I've nearly spent 8 years in this not-for-profit. Maybe it's time for me to start my own not-for-profit charitable organization. Homelessness was close to my heart because of my dad. And when I started doing the research here in Australia, and these stats are from the previous census now, and we've just completed a new census, which will be interesting to see what the results of that look like, because they're going to grow. They should grow exponentially. If they haven't, they haven't got their data. They haven't captured the data properly. But when I was doing the research, it was like, you know, over 8,000 people sleeping on the concrete, on benches in parks and under bridges every night across Australia. But what really snapped my attention was that of those thousands of people that sleep rough every night, there's hundreds of people that lose their life every year as a result of sleeping rough from things like being attacked, suicides, overdoses, infected wounds, pneumonia, that sort of thing. Wow. And here in 2021, what that means in this beautiful first world country we call home is that the average life expectancy of someone long-term sleeping rough is just 47 years of age. And I looked at that and I thought, far out, you know, you got to look at the old technological advancements and medical advancements in the last 10 years, never mind the last sort of 40 years. My dad died at the age of 42, nearly 40 years ago. And I was like, nah, this is unacceptable. I need to do something about it. And that's where the journey of Bed Down in earnest started.
What did you have? Amazing. And it's, you know, I heard that stat, over 8,000 people today sleep rough every night. And I was thinking, imagine if you had a line of people standing a meter apart, you would have 8 kilometers of people sleeping, you know?
Wow.
I thought that's just an unbelievably high number. And you're right, in a first world country.
Well, this is going to really bake your noodle now then, mate, because, you know, during the pandemic, when we were all locked down as a country, you know, one of the positive things that happened was that everyone that was sleeping rough was taken off the streets, put into hotels, motels, and other accommodation, you know, because they're one of the most vulnerable because of their immune systems are pretty shot because of the, you know, what they've got to deal with. There's been some research and some reports done into this. And, you know, the research suggests that nearly 40,000 people were put into hotels and motels and other accommodation. And this came out late last year. So this was before the end of JobKeeper and JobSeeker. Nearly 40,000 people. Wow. That's a big jump from 8,000.
And again, this is not official and we're not saying it is, and you don't know and I don't know, but you're at the coalface of this. So you think, you know, that the number was 8 3 years ago. You think it might be closer to 30 or 40 now?
Well, it'll be, I reckon, probably closer to between 25 and 30,000, because a third of those people went into longer term solutions, which meant, you know, 20,000 plus people were coming back out to the streets.
Right, right.
Now we've had the end of JobKeeper and JobSeeker, and there's other stresses and strains on the economy and on businesses and so on and so forth. So I reckon it's going to be a big number. And I'm not sure if the census would have captured it accurately either.
Yeah. Now, I think I kind of know the answer to this question, but I'd just love to hear from you. So people end up on the street for a range of reasons, of course. What are some of those reasons? Not necessarily in order of, you know,
priority. Well, the two big ones are domestic and family violence and financial distress. They're the two big ones. That's what makes people homeless. You know, homelessness is multi-layered. And from the last census, you had over 116,000 people deemed to be homeless. And, you know, in that, you've got people couch surfing in boarding houses that are overcrowded and so on and so forth. Then you've got, it then comes down to those people that are then sleeping rough on the streets. So there's a multitude of reasons. You traditionally find when you start talking to people that, you know, it's a traumatic event that's happened or occurred in someone's life that has led them to that point in time. And, you know, as human beings, unfortunately, we have a tendency to judge people very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Especially when you see someone who's on the street, you sort of, you either cross the street and try and avoid those people with any eye contact whatsoever. And, you know, those people become invisible. But ultimately through that process, people jump and go, right, you know, get off your ass, you lazy bastard. Why haven't you got a job? And, you know, you're alcoholic, you're drug addict, you know, this, that, and all the other. People judge without actually knowing how someone has actually ended up in that situation.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, it's a traumatic event in people's life that's led them to that point in time.
So you said 116,000-ish homeless, and some of those are couch surfing in other people's places and just bed hopping any way that they can. And a language question, sleeping rough, is that a relatively new term or has that term been around for a long time?
No, that's been around. The term seems to be changing. Street sleeping seems to be the current one I'm hearing quite a lot of.
Right.
You know, and it changes from country to country. I'm often connecting with a few people in the US and they call it unsheltered, you know.
Oh, unsheltered. Wow, that's interesting. All right, so you had an idea and you came out of working for a not-for-profit for a long time. And you have obviously this interesting and tragic backstory with your own dad, and you went, right, I want to do something. What was your initial idea?
So when I thought, right, this is unacceptable, I need to do something about it, the next thing, of course, is, shit, what am I going to do about it?
Yeah, that would have been my thought too. I would have gone, I'm doing something. And then my higher brain would have said, what? And then I would have gone, fuck, if I know.
It was like writing ideas on lots of these and sticking them on the wall. And I spent a few days doing that, and nothing was really resonating, connecting for me. And I got to this point, I was like, you know, when you're in the boiling pot of trying to come up with a solution to a problem, and I was like, not really getting anywhere with this. And what I find that helps me, I'm not sure if it's the same for those that are listening, is if you're in the boiling pot, it's good to take yourself out of the boiling pot to try and clear your mind and, you know, whatever it is that floats your boat, whether it's watching TV, reading a book, meditating, going for a walk, playing video games, whatever it is. This particular day, I was like, oh, I'm just going to go and grab a coffee. I'm going to go off to the local shopping center and grab a coffee, do some shopping and stuff. And look, I'm not a religious person. I'm not a religious person. But the stuff that's happened on this journey that I just can't explain, I really can't explain it. And I don't know if this particular day my dad was looking down at me or the planets just aligned. I pulled into this Westfield shopping center, opened the car door, and that's where the idea for what became Bed Down happened, because the car park was virtually empty. You know, if I had arrived any other time, and the place would have probably been full and I wouldn't have seen the opportunity. But, you know, I got out of the car and I thought, wow, I wonder if anyone's doing anything in sort of car parks. It was sheltered. It was clean. So I started getting very excited, grabbed a coffee, home. First thing I done, Google, car parks, homeless, couldn't find anything. I was like, right, okay, great. Then it was like, okay, so what are people going to sleep on then if they come to a car park? Because I can't be carrying around proper mattresses, because that's going to be very logistically challenging.
Yeah.
Storage, movement, so on and so forth. And inflatable mattresses have come a long way in recent years from the days of doing the foot pumps or trying to, you know, inflate them, you know, yourselves. That you literally take a plug out now, plug it into a socket and flick a switch and they inflate themselves and deflate themselves. So I was like, right, okay, car parks as a shelter, inflatable mattresses for people to sleep on. Then the last piece of the puzzle was, at that time, was, okay, so who are the major car park operators here in Australia? And after some more research, Secure Parking are the largest car park operator in Australia and New Zealand. They operate over 600 car parks. So I approached the CEO, Peter Anson, of Secure Parking. And I stalked him on LinkedIn and sent him a few messages. And he asked me, he goes, Norm, we get a lot of approaches. Send me an outline of what it is you want to do on an email. And I'm like, oh, far out. You know what it's like with emails, you know, depending on how you write it. And then the person who receives it interprets it. I was thinking, fine, I don't want to do that. I want to meet this guy face to face and talk him through the concept. But he was adamant I needed to send him an email. So here I was on a Friday night trying to structure this email as best as I possibly could. So it wasn't going to be like a dear Norm or no response. I was like, dear Peter, this is the problem around homelessness and people that are sleeping rough. And then I, you know, outlined about 10 dot points of what I wanted to do. And then under that, it was like Secure Parking could be a first move in this space, you know, good corporate social responsibility, community good, blah, blah, blah. And I hit the send button on this Friday night. And literally, and it gives me goosebumps even now, you know, he came back within about 15 or 20 minutes and said, wow, this sounds like a really good idea. Let's arrange a meeting. I was like, far out. So, and I think I said this to Tiffany at that point, something changed inside of me. And the only way I've ever been able to articulate it is as follows. And I hope you don't think I'm crazy, is whenever you meet someone in life and you fall in love with that person, you get to that point in the relationship where you're like, oh, it's time for us to move in together. Let's go around, look at houses or apartments. And you start going through all these different houses or apartments and nothing fits the bill. And then you walk into that one house or apartment and you go, wow, this is the place. This is where we're going to spend the rest of our life together. I found the place that I was going to spend the rest of my life. And, you know, the North Star, the purpose, that was it. Nothing was going to stop me from that point, you know. And
what a good dude, though. And how 15 minutes later, you get a reply on a Friday night.
I was like, far out. This is bloody shocking. I got validation. It was validation for the idea. And I was like, far out. And just to set the context for people, this was around October 2018. So I arranged a meeting November 2018, flew down to Sydney to go and meet with Secure Parking. And I prepared this big PowerPoint deck and I started going through this PowerPoint. And I think I got about 5 or 6 slides in and Peter put his hand up and goes, oh yeah, we want to be part of this. And I was like, that's awesome, but I've got about another 50 slides to go through. Let me take you through this PowerPoint.
And he goes, fuck your slides, we're in. And you're like, no, they took me weeks.
Yeah. He didn't know the context of what had happened with my dad or been made redundant. So once I settled that and got about 4 or 5, and I think that was it, he was like, you know, yeah, we want to be part of this. So that was November 2018. And I'll pause there for a quick second because I'm not sure how far you want me to go down the rabbit hole,
well,
so to speak.
I guess I just want to, I mean, we've got about another 20 minutes. We normally do around an hour, so maybe another 20 minutes or so. So you can go wherever you want to go, by the way, because it's all fascinating. We don't need to be led by me. Okay, what happened next? You just tell us whatever.
All right. So long story short, Secure Parking, we're on board. I have a meeting with the local council here in Brisbane in December 2018. And in my head before going to the meeting, I'm thinking, they're going to say, Norm, what a great idea. What do we need to do to make, you know, to help you with this, to get people out of public spaces and off the street and into a safe place to get a good night's sleep? It was far from that. And that's where I started to learn about all the red tape and bureaucracy that would be involved around planning and building code and compliance. And I came away from that meeting quite deflated because I was on the defensive for the whole meeting. And I was thinking, far out. I didn't even factor any of that in. I wasn't, you know, I was a bit, I suppose I was a bit naive. I was like, oh, wow, are people just going to want to help and get on board? And they were throwing all these hurdles in the way. And in amongst all that as well, I've been made redundant. I didn't have the money to get the charity off the ground. And I had I started a GoFundMe campaign in December 2018 as well. And $40,000 was the target. And I get to January 2019, raised about $1,500. I was like, wow, people... I'm grateful that people have donated $1,500. They think it's a good idea, but it's not getting enough traction. So I had to change my strategy and start getting in front of people and telling them the story and the vision of Bed Down, which we'll get to very, very quickly, given the time. And just to set the context around that, it took the best part of 8 months to go through all the red tape and bureaucracy in 2019. So towards the end of July 2019, we got all the approvals. And in amongst that, along the way, I was getting set up as a charity. We had people building websites for us, you know, and architects and planners and building code and compliance people all coming on board, you know, all providing their service free of charge, pro bono. And in amongst all that as well, I got to a point in the journey when I was beginning to get some support. And I'll cover this very, 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 very quickly. I've told this one to Tiff as well, is, you know, as well as having the personal connection to homelessness with my dad, I got to a point in the journey, I was thinking, well, if you really want to solve and address an issue, you really need to experience that issue firsthand. So I took myself, and it was only overnight, but I went into Brisbane CBD to sleep rough with two other people. And trust me, that gave me a different perspective in terms of how brutal, cruel, and inhumane it actually is. Because until you throw a sleeping bag down on a piece of concrete and try and sleep on that, you soon find, and mind you, I am nearly 75. you do find out very quickly that the human body is not designed to sleep in that environment. We've come a long way since caveman and cavewoman. So
can I just point out to my listeners, he's actually only 51. He's a very he's a very healthy, young looking 51. Yes, keep going.
Yeah. So that gave me a different perspective on how brutal, cruel, and inhumane it is, especially, you know, in this beautiful first world country we call home. So we get to the end of July, I've got all the approvals, and you know, what we've done has never been done anywhere in the world before. It was a world's first. And we activated our first pilot, which was 2 weeks in a CBD car park in an office tower towards the end of September into October of 2019. And we ran it for 2 weeks. I never set any expectations of that trial because I was like, you know, going through all the red tape and bureaucracy in my heart, I just thought it's the right thing to do. I'm just going to go with the flow and get it going. And look, the one thing I did find most nights and I put to the test is that, you know, the human body's made up of about 80% water. I would often find myself in a corner getting quite emotional. And that first occurred within a few nights into the pilot. One of our guests came up to us and we refer to the people that use our service as guests because we want to welcome people in as if they're part of the family or family friend.
I love that.
And those are people that are sleeping rough. He came up to us and he said, it's the first time I've had a dream in years. So that was it. It was all over for me. That was the first night in the corner for me getting quite emotional. And when I reflected on that, if your listeners can consider for one moment, this is a person that's, you know, on the streets every night, not getting into a deep sleep, sleeping with the proverbial one eye open in fear of either being attacked or having his belongings stolen or being moved on. For him to come in to a bed down venue and get into such a comfortable sleep that he started to dream for the first time in years was quite a profound statement.
That's amazing.
So before I go any further, though, let me just cover very, very quickly.
There's no hurry, right? You can go as long as you want, so don't worry about the time. There's no hurry. You can talk as long as you want. I just want to ask one question. So if you want to talk for another half hour, we're good. So if we finish in 10 minutes or 30, we're good. So I just want to ask, what did they sleep on and where did you get them from? So pump-up beds, obviously. Were they donated as well?
Yes. Yeah, we've got an amazing community through Facebook, LinkedIn and Instagram. And, you know, we've relied heavily on them over the years, even to this point in time now, where they donate either financially or through, you know, products and queen-size mattresses. All our guests get a queen-size mattress made up as close to a proper bed as possible, you know, and, you know, we go the extra mile. We put eye masks on there, earplugs, chocolate on the pillow. We really want to, you know, make people feel as welcome as possible. This was in the original pilot. We'll go. And look, the whole purpose of Bed Down is to take spaces that are busy during the day or empty during the day. And we take those spaces and we activate and repurpose them at night time into pop-up accommodation to provide safety, shelter, security, services, and a place for our guests to sleep. And, you know, car parks is one space. There's lots of empty spaces at night time or all the time around Australia at the moment. I think as a result of the pandemic, empty office space is something of particular interest to me. So taking those spaces that are otherwise empty and utilizing them for good is what we're all about. And look, after that person came up to us and he said, it's the first time I've had a dream in years. It was one thing after another. You know, we had a female guest, because she was able to get a safe night's sleep. She'd come up to us with the biggest smile on her face and say, can you wake me up at 4:30 in the morning because I've got a job to go to. So, you know, we had another guy after a consistent period of a good night's sleep. He, you know, after 1 week, he had the clarity of mind to say, I want to get my life back on track. And he booked himself into rehabilitation. And there was lots of stories like that. And, you know, at the end of the pilot, we sort of asked our guests to give us a rating in terms of what was the quality of sleep like and what's the quality of beds like between 1 and 5, 5 being really good, 1 not being so good. We rated 4.5 out of 5, which I was a bit bummed out about because I wanted to get 5 out of 5, but you can always do better. So
it's so funny that someone didn't give you 5.
Oh no.
I'm like, come on, bro. Anyway, that's interesting, but God bless them.
A big part of what we do is collaboration. So, you know, it's not only about providing that safe place to get a good night's sleep. It's bringing in the services, you know, doctors, nurses, dentists, social workers, counselors, new clothes, food and beverages. And, you know, we had a lot of great media around that pilot. We had a lot of great media, and it not only brought us to an audience here in Australia, but it brought us to an international audience as well. And we come off the back of that 2 week pilot on such a high of what we had achieved in terms of helping our guests. And, you know, we're thinking, here we go. We're going to this fundraising strategy, leverage all the fantastic media we'd had. But then of course it was droughts, it was bushfires, it was floods. And then this nasty little pandemic got in the way in 2020. And we managed to endure that. And we've just come off the back of an 8-week extended trial here in Brisbane. And, you know, again, we took it to another level. We had 5 of our guests get employment, and we really flipped recruitment on its head this time around, because we brought companies in that were looking to employ people, and they met with our guests. So there was no, where's your resume?
Yeah.
Although we did have recruitment agents in as well, helping with resumes and interview skills, but there was no like, you know, send us your resume before we even give you an opportunity. It was people coming in and meeting with our guests, engaging with our guests, then bringing them into an interview. When we got 5 people in into a job. I'll tell you one quick story. And a guy by the name of Ben, he reached out to us during our last trial, that's just finished, through Facebook. And he said, hey, I hear you guys have got this shelter operating in Brisbane CBD in a car park, but I can't find it. Where is it? I was like, Ben, this is where it is. And this is the time you need to turn up. And these are what we expect your behaviors to be, because we're very conscious when we're operating someone's business, you've got to protect the business, like secure parking, then the landlord that's operating the office block. And then the bed down brand. So we call it the values of entry, which is the behavioral expectation. So, you know, respect for one another, no alcohol, no drugs, no other substances. And then there's a list of other things. So I took him through them and I said, hey, you know, we have recruitment agents coming in to help with interviews and resumes. What's your background? He said, hey, my background's warehousing, supply chain, logistics. I was like, right, okay, cool. I'll see you tomorrow night. So he rocked up the next night. And as he was walking in, I was like, Ben, this is probably going to be one of the best nights you've had in a long time. I've actually got an organization in here tonight that are looking to recruit people in warehousing, logistics, and supply chain. Do you want to meet with them? He's like, yeah, hell yeah. So he checked in and he met with them. Quality Foods, they're cool. And they brought him in for an interview. They employed him. He got accommodation. And then he was recently promoted to a team leader position. So this is a guy that was on the streets for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And we will not everyone will have a first night like Ben. So I've got to be careful about expectations there. But, you know, the whole purpose of Bed Down is really on being based on three core foundations. And I'll take you through those very quickly. And hopefully it will connect all the dots for you. It's first and foremost, it's about, we believe everyone deserves a bed to sleep in. So in 2021, no one should be sleeping on concrete, on a bench, in a park, or under a bridge. You know, sleep deprivation is a massive issue for people. You know, the ironic term of sleeping rough because they don't get much sleep, which leads to physical and mental health issues. So providing a safe place to get a good night's sleep, we believe everyone deserves a bed to sleep in, is our first core foundation. The second core foundation is the most important one. It's also the longest one, and it's about repairing the quality of life before building a life of quality for our guests. So if we chop that in half, repairing the quality of life, so that's all about collaboration. So, you know, wrapped around the premise of providing a safe, secure, comfortable place to get a good night's sleep, we bring in doctors and nurses, like I said earlier on, and dentists and all those other services. That helps to restore dignity, respect, self-esteem, and confidence back to our guests. Building a life of quality is how do we get this person from their current situation into a longer term solution? And what does that look like? Is it education, training, employment, accommodation, or rehabilitation, or a combination of all those factors? We get someone into a longer term solution. And this is all about choice as well. Remember, you can't force someone into a longer, they've got to be ready for it. But we get someone into a longer term solution means they're not coming back to use Bed Down, which is absolutely incredible, which then leads it to our last core foundation, which is the big, hairy, audacious goal of Bed Down, which is to expedite the end of Bed Down. So at some point in the future, we're not required anymore. Yeah. However, I'm not naive in the fact that when I say that, you don't just flick a switch and that's it, you end homelessness. It's a long game, but that's the drive, determination, and vision from day one to transition as many people into a longer term solution as possible. So getting five people into employment, getting five people into accommodation, and we got one person into rehabilitation as a result of that was absolutely incredible.
I love how you articulate all that, and you know that so well, and you explain it so beautifully. And it is so much more than, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, you're giving people a bed for the night and some sleep. And you're so right with all of the ramifications of having little or no sleep, you know, physical, mental, emotional issues are, you know, rampant because it's just destroys, apart from everything else, the old immune system just doesn't work without That's sleep. Right. You know, repair and recovery, mental health doesn't work without sleep, emotional health, decision-making, energy, you know, physical energy, emotion. Yeah, so it's, but what, I mean, you're literally changing lives. So where are you at now and what do you need from us? What do you need from us, so, listeners, and what do you need from my audience, and how can we help?
So just a couple of things, because you picked on it. You sort of touched on it there. And, you know, Bed Down is a platform. First and foremost, we're like a first response. It's about getting people off the streets into a safe place to get a good night's sleep. But it is a platform that looks to change people's lives and save people's lives, ultimately, through all those things that I've just mentioned. So where we're up to now is we've just come off the back of an 8-week extended trial. And pardon the pun here, we're kind of like homeless. We're in between homes at the moment. I'm looking for a new venue. So we're looking for a new venue here in Brisbane before we can get a permanent venue rolling. And then ideally what we want to do is then bring Bed Down to as many people across Australia as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had that many different approaches from people in Melbourne, from people in Sydney, from people in WA. And, you know, when's Bed Down coming here? Which ultimately we want to do, but, you know, I'm a one-man band at the minute, me, myself, and I. So ultimately I've got to grow the organization to bring more people in to help it scale and grow and get a permanent venue rolling and get more outcomes. And, you know, so first and foremost, I'm sure your listeners are far and wide at the moment. So, we're looking for a new home in Brisbane. Got a couple of spaces that I'm looking at the moment. But ultimately, you know, We're a small charity. We rely heavily on the general public. We've started getting some small donations through corporates and philanthropic donations also. So any support financially is always greatly appreciated.
Where do people go? Let's hit the pause button. Where do people go to do that?
The 3ws.beddown.org.au, and you can donate online.
All right, you can
You can also, through the website as well, if you want to register your interest, express interest to be a volunteer. We're always going to need volunteers. Depends on what part of the world you are. So if you're someone in Melbourne or another part of Australia, you know, you can register your interest, but it may take us a while to come back to you until we get a site rolling in that part of the world.
But also think about it. It's like, especially now, you know, Norm, that so many people have got so many skills. Like, if I'm a lawyer, I don't need to be in Brisbane.
That's right.
I'm a web designer, I don't need to be in Brisbane. If I'm a psychologist, I don't need to be, it's better, but I don't need to be in Brisbane. Yeah, you know, if I'm an IT expert or I'm a financial guru if people have got skills and you want to get involved, I love what you're doing. I love it. I think it's such a unique, brilliant, original idea. You know, probably also what you don't know about me is I'm an exercise scientist by qualification, so I understand the body really well. I'm doing a doctorate in neuropsychology, so I'm not bad with the mind. So for me, I completely understand and talk about a lot the value of sleep. And I know it's not just sleep that you're giving them, it's safety and security and love and attention. But, you know, having a healthy quality night's sleep is such a good platform for every day. It's such a good starting point. So what you're doing, and I know it's much bigger than just the sleep and just the security, but I want to be involved. So I don't know what that looks like, but I want to be involved. So we're going to help out. You know, what else do you need?
There's a couple of things, you know. I mean, ultimately, as a child, I couldn't help my dad. I couldn't help my dad as a child. But now through Bed Down, we can help someone else's dad, someone else's mom, someone else's son, and someone else's daughter. And it's interesting, you know, the sleep thing is a big thing, and I'm going to do it at the next. Well, I'm hopefully going to do it at the next one. I'm going to get people's permission, but I wished, you know, the two times we ran these trials is, you know, the first night someone's coming in, I wish I'd lined them up against the wall and done, like, you know, the old mugshot. You know, when you're arrested, you get the mugshot, because honestly, the physical transformation you see people go through after a consistent period of a good night's sleep, and, you know, interaction and healthy food or food in general, you know, it's an incredible impact and difference and journey these people go through. It really is.
Also, and I'm with you, like, just love, just somebody loving me, somebody giving me kindness and attention, somebody whose only agenda is to help. Like, how awesome is that? There's no hooks, catches, agendas, you know? I love it.
There's a lot of power. There's a lot of power in giving someone a hug and receiving a hug.
Yeah.
And we do that a lot.
Yeah. So good. Now, what do you need in terms of, do you have any, in terms of professionals, do you need anyone on board with any particular skills, or you're okay at the moment?
Look, I mean, at the minute, I'm going to be looking at, we spoke about the website, but I've got to get the website upgraded. So if there's anyone out there in your networks that want to get involved in that perspective, because like you say, you don't need to be a web designer here in Brisbane. You can do that from anywhere.
Mm, right.
So website developers, I'm certainly looking at doing some stuff on the website. Certainly at the next venue, once we pardon the pun, bed it down. Mm. I am going to sort of bring in a programmatic approach to what we do and start trialing a programmatic approach, because, you know, helping people with addiction issues, whether it be alcohol or another substance. So taking people through a process of rehabilitation through, you know, motivational interviewing, cognitive behavior therapy, that sort of thing, through to life skills, tenancy skills, employability skills. I almost want to turn it into a program of, for argument's sake, it could be a 12-week program off the top of my head. So if a guest turns up and say, hey, I'm going to guarantee you a safe place to get a good night's sleep for the next 12 weeks, but I want you to commit to this program. And by the end of it, we're going to address a whole heap of things. Mm. And hopefully at the end of it, you're going to go into a job or you're going to go into accommodation and so on and so forth, but take them through a programmatic approach. I'm certainly going to building a better life program, in air commas. I'm thinking of calling that.
I might be able to help you with that. All right, mate, you're a champion. We're going to stay in touch. And we're going to do another one of these in 6 months. And I'm going to do a call to action to my tribe. And we're going to see if we can help out. So tell me the web address again, the W's.
Yep. 3w.beddown.org.au. And you'll find us on your favorite social media channels, being Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Just search for Bed Down.
You're a great man. Great idea. Thanks for sharing some of your story on the U Project. I'm so sorry about what happened recently with Jasper, but God bless you and your family. Well done on the tattoo, you fucking alpha male warrior. I can look
it's
at you.
Sore. Yeah, of course. Ripped apart
of
today.
Course it's sore. Someone put a fucking needle in your arm 3 million times today. All right, mate. You take
Thank
care.
You, Craig.
Tiff, good.
Thank you, Tiffany. Tiffany
well done,
very
Tiff.
Quiet during that. I heard her. I didn't realise she was there.
Sometimes I'm quiet as a mouse, you know, Norm.
Really? Fucking hell.
The mouse that roared. Thanks, everyone. Give Norm a hand, will you? Thanks, mate. Stay there,
thank
buddy.
You. Appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone. Love your guts.